Hello and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Rive.
And I'm Diana McCullough.
And you're listening to Talk From Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of superhero television or film. And this week on the podcast, we are talking about G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra.
Cobra. It's rising up.
It's the rise of Cobra. It's not Rise of the Cobra. It's the rise of Cobra.
Cobra, oh, wow. Cobra. I don't know if the bra is...
I don't know.
Just all bras.
I've just decided to add emphasis on bra. They're Cobra.
Oh, but they're like bras getting along over there.
I don't think... It's not like Cobro, but it's like Cobra. Like, they're a little surprised by the word that's coming out of their mouth.
Even they didn't know they were in Cobra.
They didn't know that they were about to rise.
And a lot of them are brainwashed, so they probably didn't.
It's a bananas movie.
Spoilers for G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra.
For this 16-year-old gem. So we're talking about G.I. Joe. Gem. We're talking about G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra today, because next month there is a new G.I. Joe movie coming out, simply titled Snake Eyes.
And this movie has... many of the Snake Eyes Man.
This has the Snake Eyes Man, a different Snake Eyes Man. It is, so the movie coming out next month is not in this canon, from what I understand and have gleamed and gathered. But what is canon for a toy movie, you know?
What is the G.I. Joe canon?
What is the Ship of Theseus? If you remove the G.I. Joe and replace it with a G.I. Joe, is it the same G.I. Joe?
If I still call it Snake Eyes, but it's a different actor, is it still
Snake
Eyes?
Is it still Snake Eyes?
I think the answer is yes.
So we'll see. But Snake Eyes...
if it's secretly a prequel to this...
Honestly, the reason that I add all of those disclaimers...
just in case.
I would not be surprised if at the end of that Snake Eyes movie, like, The Rock and Channing Tatum showed up. And the studio was like, yeah, we're thinking we're back. Or, like, you know, they John Wick it or whatever they do.
Also John Wick is there.
Also John Wick is there because they've gone absolutely... but you know what I mean? Like, it would not surprise me one bit. But Snake Eyes is coming out next month. We're building up to it. We're building up to a lot of new releases a month early because everything is coming out next month.
June has been so weird for us.
Just all build up.
All build up for just so much in July. It's been fun.
And so far, none of the July stuff has been moved. I might be wrong.
Oh, man. Andrew might have to drink his drink.
Is that a metaphor?
I didn't want to make you eat something you didn't want to eat.
Okay. All right.
So I'm like, you're going to have to drink your drink.
Classic expression. You know that old ditty.
I think it could catch on.
Sometimes you just gotta drink your drink.
You gotta shoot your shot. You gotta drink your drink.
You gotta drink your drink. So we're gonna be talking about G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra today on the podcast. But before we get into today's episode, we want to thank our first sponsor of today's episode. It is our wonderful and good friends over at Virtual Game Night.
Our good friends at Virtual Game Night who helped us get through the pandemic in a wonderful, incredible fashion. And as the world starts to get back normal and in-person gatherings become possible again, you still want to stay connected with the people who don't live in your city. You still want to be able to have fun with them at a virtual game night.
Yeah, I feel like that is something that's happening that now, obviously, regionally, depending on where you are in the world, some things are open or starting to open. And before, geographic location didn't matter because we were all hanging out digitally all of the time. And I feel like as things are opening up, we're actually kind of like losing touch with some of the more physically distant friends that we wouldn't normally be able to see. And this is a good way to, like, stay hanging out with them and having a special night and a special time.
Yeah, because all my sisters live really far away. We got kind of close during the pandemic, but now I actually am not talking to them as much. So, like, a special night to hang out and have a really fun time doing trivia and games together is actually really, really fun and cool.
Yeah, you and your sisters did spread out.
We have covered the entire country of Canada.
Yeah. You got a strong chunk of the continent going on, and you need a digital reason to get together with any kind of relative ease or sanity. And this is going to do it for you.
This is absolutely going to do it for you. It is TV game show level production values. You will have this wonderful host, Ollie Robinson, will be your professional MC, run all the games for you. It will be smooth. It will be so much fun. We have so much fun every time we play virtual game night.
Yeah, we've done several now. It's always a blast. It's got a real-time interactive platform, so that means that you can host your game for anywhere from 2 to 1,000 players. So it can be a friend gathering, a family gathering, a work party, whatever it is. And you don't need, you know, paper and pen. You don't need special software or a video game system. You just need a web browser and Zoom to do it. And it's filled with all of these really fun games where no matter what it is that you're into or you like, you can you're going to find something that's into you. Like, obviously, it's a trivia event. There's going to be general knowledge questions. But then there's also, like, observation and recall, like, memory-based questions. There's a spelling bee, an emoji decoding game. We had a ton of fun with that and learned, even though most of our friend group is the same age, we learned who is the oldest spiritually.
We also learned who uses more emojis.
There's an age-related factor involved in that. But it's really fun because there's a little something for everybody.
Virtual game night is also incredible for work events. I think people aren't coming back to the offices very quickly. You still want to keep in touch with your coworkers, and they're very experienced in offer events. They've done over 200 events and counting for companies like Microsoft, YouTube, Deloitte, Facebook, Adobe, Google, just huge companies, small companies. Virtual game nights are very fun and very great.
Yeah, and it allows you to just relax. You book the night, and then that's it. You're done. Your job's done. You don't need to host stuff. You don't need to be the life of the party. You just kick back and enjoy the party.
You just play the games, and all of your hosts takes care of everything for you.
Yeah, you're all set up. So if you want to turn your next virtual gathering into a virtual game night, visit virtualgamenight.live/superhero and use the promo code superhero25 to take 25% off the price of any game night, which is their biggest discount ever. So join over 14,000 other players who have livened up their Zoom calls by making your next virtual event a virtual game night at virtualgamenight.live/superhero and enter promo code superhero25 to take 25% off the price of any game night. virtualgamenight.live/superhero, promo code superhero25, and thank you very much, Virtual Game Night, for your support.
Thank you for your support and all the fun games we have played with you.
And now, let's get into the episode. Let's talk about the absolute insanity that is G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. So we have seen G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, the Hasbro film based on the action figure, based on the action figure that coined the term action figure. I don't think they copyrighted it, but they should have. It probably just wouldn't be as ubiquitous if they had. But it's G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. Let's start off with the usual question. Diana, did you like it?
I did not like it. No.
Fascinating.
And it's really sad I didn't like it because it has everything I like. It's got bromances, it's got fun, it's got tons of actors I really, really like. And it's just a real, real bad movie. It's no fun. It's got too much going on. It's taking itself way too seriously for how inherently silly it is. And just no one has any chemistry with each other in any way, even though there's like 18,000 relationships happening. None of them work and none of them feel real or interesting, except definitely Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow. They're the highlight of the movie. They're the only good part. The rest of this movie sucks. It's so sad because it's got all the elements of a really good movie, but it's a very bad movie. Andrew, did you like G.I. Joe, Rise of the Cobra?
No, I did not.
No, you did not. Excellent.
This movie's a bananas mess, but you are right. It has all of the raw ingredients of a banger. Like, if you were looking at the recipe list, it would be like G.I. Joe, an inherently kind of like silly, camp, cheesy property. And granted, Channing Tatum wasn't then the star that he is now. And
he
even
wasn't
now
he
wasn't at all. And even now it's arguable. Like, he's had some hits and misses, some franchises that didn't necessarily pan out, but like his star power is bigger now than it was then. But today, if someone was like a G.I. Joe movie starring Channing Tatum, I'd be like, of course, a charming beefcake who understands like comedy, knows how to do camp, doesn't take himself that seriously. And then you lay out this absolute slaughter of a cast that this is. It has all of the raw ingredients to bake the perfect cake of like this wonderfully delicious thing, and none of it comes together in any way that works.
Flattest cake you've ever seen.
And from...
Overcooked? Undercooked?
All of it. All of it. And from the director of The Mummy, one of a for regular listeners of the podcast will know, a beloved film here at the Talk from Superheroes Network.
One of my top 10 favorite films. To the point where I will say one of the best scenes in this movie is the only scene with Brendan Fraser. So yeah. I'm like, did Brendan Fraser make The Mummy good? Director, did you do nothing?
Definitely.
Was it all Brendan Fraser?
Brendan did a lot of heavy lifting. Let's be real and honest. For sure, Brendan did a lot of
it. And also, he should be in this movie more. What's with this one scene bullshit?
Yeah. Well, I think this was at the point where Brendan was like, my back's ruined. I can't do.
I'm just going to ride up in a golf cart.
Yeah. He can't do action anymore.
Yeah, fair enough. You wish he could, but you totally understand.
Yeah. Yeah, but he easily could have been, you know, the Dennis Quaid character. You could have given more to Brendan Fraser.
You can always give more to Brendan Fraser.
You can always give more. But yeah, so many raw ingredients of a good thing, but it inherently does not understand any of it. And I don't understand, I'm frankly confused how they could get so much so wrong.
It is baffling. Like, to me what's so wild is that this movie has made every good actor bad. Like, it's not like these are good actors, like, doing their best with a bad script. Like, everyone's bad in this. Christopher Eccleston, one of the greatest actors of all time, is bad in this. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is bad. Channing Tatum is not charming or enjoyable in any way. And then the worst part is the good actors are bad, and then the bad actors are bottom tier, atrocious, just rock bottom bad. I'm sorry, Sienna Miller. I'm going to call you out. You're terrible in this movie. So yeah, it's really shocking that none of these elements could combine to at least make even parts that are fun or at least one standout performance.
And it's bloated. It's way too long. It's got too many storylines. It's poorly like edited as well. Even just like the pacing of like, the amount of dead air in between each line of dialogue. Mm-hmm. I would say of actors who are trying their best in this movie, like saying how like the good actors do mediocre and the bad actors do atrocious. One who is trying a lot is Marlon Wayans.
He's working.
Oh, like Marlon Wayans, I can feel his back sweat. Like when he is working so hard, you know, when you get that like that down your spine, that like drip of back sweat. I have been, as a comedian, as a stand-up comedian, I have performed in rooms where I'm like, the audience is dead. No one's giving anything. This is not going to be good no matter what. But I am going to try everything to get one laugh out of these fucking people. And Marlon Wayans is doing that. He is doing every dead audience stand-up show that I've ever done that I've still given a fuck about. We're trying so hard and hoping beyond hope that the editor knows how to edit comedy, because there are raw ingredients where even though like it's a very broad family generic delivery of comedy that Marlon Wayans is giving, and I don't even say that to be insulting, just to be like it's big, it's broad, it's campy, it's family.
There's always one silly guy in these ensemble action movies. One guy who's like fun, but he's going to be fine. Like, you know, the impenetrable sidekick. He's not going to die. He's going to be there for comic relief.
It's
he's
trite, the comedic it's relief. Cliche, but it's there for a reason, and it can and usually works. And Marlon Wayans is giving all the raw ingredients for that to work, and they don't know how to edit comedy. There's way too much silence and awkward stares and, like, long shots where no one gives him fucking anything.
They give him nothing, and about a quarter of the way into the movie, all of his scenes are suddenly with, what's her name, Scarlett? Rachel Nichols?
Yeah.
With Scarlett, and she's not a comedian, and she's given him nothing to work with. Because the best scenes he has are early in the movie before him and Duke Channing Tatum get separated. Because those two together almost work. And it's crazy that it doesn't, because Channing Tatum's so good usually in movies like this, like the 21 Jump Streets and stuff. Because I think their best scene is probably just them in the car on the very opening of the movie. It's just the two of them. So you don't really have to edit much because it's just them in a car. They're both in the shot together. And it's like I've been thinking. He's like, don't do that. It's going to hurt yourself. And just very easy back and forth. And I'm like, if these two had just gotten to be in the movie together a bit more.
Yeah.
Because they really, as soon as they introduce Marlon Wayans' love interest, don't hang out anymore. and then the movie really suffers for it. Because those two together could have really lifted it up.
And they tried to set up the movie as this buddy comedy of those two, which could have worked. And you're right, that scene in the truck does really work. And I think it's because, and I've said this before on the podcast, it's comedy exists in the wide. Mm-hmm. You need to see, you want to, if it's a back and forth, you need to see both of them, how they respond to one another. You want it to be quick. You want it to be bantery. And that moment in the car is that. And in every other moment, it's these shots where Marlon Wayans is delivering a joke as hard as he can. He is pulling muscles, working so hard to deliver a comedic line.
He's not sweating because he's in an action scene.
Yeah.
He is sweating because he is trying to pull comedy out of thin air, out of nothing.
He's trying to airbend comedy. In that moment.
He is Michael Fassbendering. He's going to poop himself.
He's going to poop himself.
He's going to poop.
And everyone else in the scene seems really worried if they're standing on their mark or not.
Oh, they like, really do.
Everyone is stiff as a board. The one that really killed me, it's the flashback scene when Channing Tatum proposes to Anna. Mm-hmm. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt is there. So like, Channing Tatum proposes to Anna, is like, will you marry me? And Joseph Gordon-Levitt walks up, and every line is exposition always in this movie. So Anna's like, this is my brother, my precious brother, being shipped off with you. You take care of him. And Marlon Wayans walks up and is like, are you talking to my best friend here, Duke, proposing to you, Anna, in front of her brother, who's also, it is all exposition.
It's all like Kronk and Emperor's New Groove, like, oh, Cusco's poison, the poison for Cusco.
And in that moment, Marlon Wayans, I think, improvises some charm. And he's just okay, hang on. You can't marry my man unless you talk to me about marrying my man. Are you going to marry my man? And he's going way too fast, and he's clearly going off script. And Sienna Miller is a statue.
She is having none of it.
She never looks Marlon Wayans in the eye. She is looking slightly off camera to where a director told her her sight line for the scene is. And, like, a director at some point was like, Sienna Miller, pretend Channing Tatum is here just off to the camera. That's your sight line. And when Marlon Wayans went off script, like a robot trying to process a syntax error, she and even Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Channing Tatum all go into, like, power-saving mode and just stare blankly. And no one helps him at all.
Which is so wild to me because, like, JGL and Channing are better than that. Mm. Maybe Channing wasn't there yet. Like, looking at his IMDb,
yeah.
The only movies he'd done so far were the step-up movies.
Right.
So he was just, like, a dancer who acted, basically, until this point. This really was his, like, biggest, by far, role he'd had. So, like, I get being a little stiff, maybe, but knowing what he becomes later, seeing this movie is like, why do we give you more chances? You're nothing in this.
Yeah,
they're all so robotic. And Marlon Wayans, I think, is the most veteran of the crew. He's like 37 in this movie. He's already done so much comedy, so much action. He's been in tons of these films. But like everyone else is so stiff. And not in like a military way.
Mm-hmm.
Not like we're like, no fun military people. They're like, I'm very scared to fuck up the editor or like not say lines that aren't in the script. Yeah, everyone's very tense and frightened.
Yeah, and I don't know why for a fun goof around movie that doesn't seem like there was a lot of pressure involved.
Yeah, like there's nothing in the IMDb about like over budget or like reshoots or like anything. It's just like it seems like it was a smooth filming experience.
The only thing that I found about reshoots, which they should not have done, but was they added about 10 scenes with Dennis Quaid because they liked working with Dennis Quaid and they were under time and budget. And so they were like, fuck it, let's call back Dennis Quaid to hang out. That's how chill this production was. I cannot think of a more stress-free blockbuster movie environment for a blockbuster movie to be like, fuck it, let's hang out with Dennis Quaid for another week.
Well, here, let me throw some theories out. Maybe they're under budget and under time because maybe this director takes the first take of every scene. Mm. And Marlon Wayans can have fun on his first take, but everyone else is like, we need like four takes to loosen up, have a little banter. And he's like, we got it, done. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Channing Tatum are just like, oh, I was going to do something on the next take, but we're done? Oh, okay. Like, maybe?
Maybe?
If you're under time, it's the only explanation.
Maybe. That would be it. That would be all I could figure out.
But it's so wild that this movie is framed as being so fun. Like, so many elements should be so insanely fun because nothing in my entire life prepared me for the opening of this film. When this movie started...
Wait a minute. You think that that sets you up for fun?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I did. Like, ridiculous fun. Okay, like, not okay. A good movie fun.
Okay.
But like, oh, this movie knows it's fucking dumb and it's going to have fun. Because this movie opens. It's like, G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. I'm like, I know what G.I. Joe is. And then the very next caption is, France, 1641. I'm like, I guess I don't know what G.I. Joe is because we're in France in 1641. And then the very first shot is like a close-up on a ruby, and I'm like, is this going to be a magic movie? Like, is there going to be a magic part of G.I. Joe? Because I don't really know G.I. Joe, whatever. And then it's not. It's just a ruby. It's not anything. And it's nonsense. And it's, and then the next caption is, somewhere in the future.
The not-too-distant future.
The not-too-distant future. So whoever's doing the captions is having a great time.
Oh, yeah, huge. Huge.
Huge fun.
Well, also, so this movie, you're correct. Like, it starts in 16th century France, and then it goes to the...
For some reason.
And then it goes from 16th century France, a Scotsman in 16th century France is the scene.
Yes, yes.
Then
yes.
It cuts to the not-so-distant future NATO headquarters in Belgium. And then it goes from there to, like, Kyrgyzstan?
You did go to Kyrgyzstan, yep. That's where Duke was.
And I want to make this clear that we're not talking about the wrong movie here.
We're talking about G.I. Joe.
The real American hero.
The real American hero.
Most American thing possible. I think that only two scenes in the Oval Office with the president are the only scenes in this movie that take place in America with more than two American characters.
I think the only other scene would be when Marlon Wayans, like, parachutes onto the White House.
Ooh, maybe,
but that's so brief. Like, he just saved Washington, and then he had to crash land.
Yeah.
That's it.
For G.I. Joe is the most international movie imaginable. Like, it's a more international franchise than, like, Fast and the Furious or, like, other Resident Evil. Other movies that became the, like, we have an international cast and crush internationally.
Or I can't even think of what it is, but I feel like there is, like, a group which is, like, the international group. Like,
Rainbow
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Six.
Or something.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. S.H.I.E.L.D. S.H.I.E.L.D.
is
a good
like,
one.
Kind of American, but they have, like, people all over the planet.
You know? Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six is the big one that it seems that that Amazon Prime maybe, if they greenlight it, are building towards a series of that. And it's also a video game series and it's books, but Rainbow Six would be the closest thing. They're basically doing Rainbow Six.
Yeah, it's a very weird choice to be like, this is the movie where... If you only hired Americans and everyone's an American character, no one can complain. It's G.I. Joe, the all-American hero. And it's one of the most diverse casts I've ever seen. And I love that. But I'm also like, why isn't it set in America?
It is.
Was it too? Could you not afford to film in America?
I think it is. And I don't think it's that. I think they wanted it to be international and to be like, this is like a sexy James Bond movie. But it's one of the biggest examples of you didn't read the brief.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't understand the source material. It is G.I. Joe, the real American hero. I think, like, of all their – they've had so many slogans over the years. It was – I think the cartoon was the real American hero. I think it was the action figure was called, like, the American Soldier Boy was their tagline. It was, like, the true American soldier doll. Like, everything has had the word America in it in G.I. Joe. And it's just so international. It never takes place on American soil. I never understand what's happening or why they're an international special force that are called G.I. Joe,
yeah,
even though they're like
sense.
Super weird and strange. It's so off the mark. It reminds me of there is an episode of Community where Jeff is in like a coma and he's going into – and it's animated. It's in an episode of the G.I. Joe cartoon. And there is a voiceover who I think is the original voiceover of the Hasbro cartoon who's doing this voiceover of like, here, it's G.I. Joe. They're a team of special forces. And it trails off and the voiceover just goes, the bad guys have snakes on them. The good guys are soldier boys. It's really not that complicated. And that is the perfect epitome of like, how did you fuck up the most simplistic concept. The bad guys have snakes on them. The good guys are soldier boys. It's the easiest concept.
It is such an easy concept. And, but also, like, I don't care. I don't mind that it's not like, hoorah, America. Like, I don't need that. Mm-hmm. But as you said, like, not reading the brief, I imagine if you're a huge fan of G.I. Joe, you're like, where's all the America?
Right.
Why isn't, like, this, like, at least an American-run association? Why isn't it based in America at the very least? Like, we fly out of the basketball court of the Pentagon every week, like the fucking X-Men.
Yeah.
Like, at least be based there.
And especially when...
Were they in Egypt and the North Pole? Oh, no, the North Pole was the bad guys.
The bad guys were in the... They're all over. They're literally everywhere in the world. And this is also Hasbro, as a film producer. This is Hasbro is a toy company and a film producer who also made the Transformers movies, mm-hmm. which, for better or worse, had like a fucking dozen movies of ranging successes, despite any criticisms that you might have about them. And in the Transformers movies, one thing that they did is they were like, we need soldier action boys. And they got, I can't remember if it was Josh Duhamel or who it was.
It was Josh Duhamel.
They had Tyrese as well, I think. They had like a bunch of soldier action boys. And they were like, we have an American military unit who need to escort the Transformers. Like, they had more G.I. Joe in Transformers than in the G.I. Joe movie. So it's so weird that it's like, you can do the assignment. I know that you can. And you accidentally did it in the other one. And there are many, I think, very reasonable complaints about movies presently and criticisms about how movies get funded through the military-industrial complex and can often be recruitment propaganda. And there are some criticisms which I, through mixed response, will sometimes agree with, sometimes disagree with about Marvel movies for this. The Independence Day sequel was a big critique for that because it was basically funded by the U.S. military and their website was a recruitment website. It was .us.gov/recruitment.
Ew, gross. I didn't see Independence Day 2, but
Neither did I because that was the worst example I could think of. Like, their ads were literally like, join the Space Defense Force. And it was it directed you to a website now. That was a recruitment website for the U.S. military. So there are ranges of it being absolutely brutal and it sometimes working. But this is the one movie where you get a pass.
Yeah. So it's very weird that we're even arguing because, like, I'm glad they didn't, but I don't understand why they didn't.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it's not, like, a military recruitment movie, although on the IMDb trivia I was reading that Channing Tatum didn't want to do it because he thought it would be.
Right.
And, like... We're toning that down a little. So good on them, I guess. Like, it really is internet. It's a completely international team, and that's interesting and potentially fun. It's not executed well at all, but it's not because the team's international.
Yeah.
That it's not a fun movie because none of the rest of it works either. So it's weird choices.
Really strange choices all around. I don't understand what they were going for, and it's just so unnecessarily complicated.
There is so much happening. Every character has like two equally important relationships happening. Like, I think I wrote down all the main relationships happening. We got Duke and Ripcord.
Oh god, this is going to be a like Pepe Silva detective board with yarn going everywhere.
Because there should only be like one main relationship in a 2-hour movie. Like, this is what the movie's about.
Who's the heart of this movie is a question they should be able to answer.
Of this movie. So you got Duke and Ripcord introduced as like the buddies.
Best friends. They join the military together. Ride or die. They've served several tours. Best friends.
But then almost immediately you get Duke and Anna. Anna's the bad guy, the Baroness.
Yes.
And then Duke used to be in love with her and now she's evil. And you're like, oh, okay, maybe that's the crux. And then right after that, Ripcord meets Scarlet, the lady. And you're like, oh, okay. And then he stops hanging out with Duke. And then you find out that Rex, the bad guy, is Duke's kind of brother-in-law and Anna's actual brother.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going on. What else you got? You got Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow doing and tons
they have
of
their,
stuff.
They have their own movie of backstory, they will get a separate movie next month, which is why we're covering this, but
and
they have their own thing.
Storm Shadow and Anna kind of have something going on. I don't really know what's going on there. The Baroness.
Oh, yeah.
Just some kind of like henchman's
rivalry-ish, even though she's brainwashed and follows his orders, which makes no sense that, like, she's brainwashed and only does what she's told, but also has a series of, like, rich friendships, rivalries, and relationships with these people. Like, is in a romantic relationship with Christopher Eccleston's character.
Yeah, I mean, that's a brainwash for sure. But
yeah, but then has a rivalry with another henchman, which, like, you wouldn't have a rivalry with a brainwashed character.
I actually honestly think that makes sense for Storm Shadow. No, hear me out. You're laughing. You're laughing, but not in a fun way. What we know about Storm Shadow is he doesn't take rivalry well.
Mm.
Because as soon as Snake Eyes got a little bit better at martial arts than him, he killed his master.
In like a week. Way too soon.
Way too soon. He couldn't handle it at all. So now he's in a rivalry with a person who he can brainwash. So he's like, this rivalry's fun because no matter what, I'm going to win because I can just tell you to lose if I want to. So I think that really fits Storm Shadow's personality.
Hmm.
He can't handle not winning.
I get
that.
But
he does want a rival.
Ah, yeah. I think that would make more sense if his rival wasn't brainwashed, though. I agree with you. He wants a rival.
He wants a rival. I mean, he still has Snake Eyes.
Yeah, so he's got that.
He's got two rivals.
There's too many layers to literally everyone in this movie.
Way too many relationships and plots. We got warheads, we got mech suits, we got invisibility suits, we got multiple hidden bases, we got submarines, we got jets that you can't see. What else do we got? Nanobots.
Holograms. Everyone's a hologram.
So many holograms.
And for no reason. Like, there are scenes where characters just walk through other characters. And then the scene ends. But there was no, like, I used a hologram as a twist. It literally never happens. That they establish holograms so hard and never use them as a plot twist.
Yeah, it's never like, you think I'm in this room, but it's a hologram. It really is just showing off ideas. Because the invisibility suit, they're like, oh, look, an invisibility suit. So you think to yourself, you're going to sneak in somewhere with an invisibility suit. But she just uses it one time 5 minutes later, and it doesn't work very well at all.
She tries to change into it while being choked. The least stealthy moment to be stealthy.
Okay, trope corner.
No.
I hate when people stop fighting you when you go invisible, when they know exactly where you are.
Right, right, right.
You're in a chokehold.
Yeah.
They're touching you.
And Anna's like, oh,
my God. Where could she be? Still in my arms being choked, perhaps?
What if I continue choking her until she was unconscious?
I can't keep fighting this woman. She's clearly a witch. She's invisible. What do you think just happened?
Like, if you keep choking, you'll hear the thud of an invisible woman hit the earth as she falls unconscious.
And then you've got a new invisibility suit that you can take off her body.
Congratulations. It's better than the cat suit you're wearing.
Oh, your cat suit's atrocious.
Everyone else has full armor. Why are you in a cat suit?
Oh, brainwashing, you know? Oh, yeah, that's a trope I hate. And you know how I love plugging one of my favorite shows, Heroes. Heroes is the only people who have ever seen do it right, where like Peter's in a fight with Siler and he goes invisible and Siler just like shoots glass everywhere and hits him and he's like, found you. Like, he's like unfazed. He's like, I know you're still here.
Right. And you're still vulnerable to glass and physical harm. Yeah. So it's not particularly difficult.
This was season one Heroes when it was good.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that sounds killer. It was still Heroes.
Hey!
It's all a rich tapestry.
Heroes season one was good.
It might have been. There were moments. I would have to go back and rewatch it.
Well, that's a future episode.
That's
just waiting to happen.
A future episode. But let's take a break in today's episode to thank our second sponsor of the episode, our good friends over at TeePublic.com.
TeePublic.com. We know them. We love them. We buy their shirts. We wear their shirts.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good stuff.
Yeah.
You're going to get an independent design from an independent artist who's getting a fair commission from their work, and you're going to look real nice.
You're going to look fantastic. It's all well-made, well-priced, shipped right to your doorstep. And don't let the name fool you. It's not just T-shirts. You can get long sleeves, hoodies, sweaters. You can get accessories and accoutrements. Cell phone cases, laptop cases, wall art, pillows. It's hot in the summertime. I'm looking at getting some new tank tops. I need to... Sun's out, guns out. Like, let's have a little fun. Let's show them shoulders.
We're going to show them shoulders, and the designs are going to be amazing. You're not going to find them anywhere else. And also, any color you want, which is wild. Like, you can, I love opening the design and seeing it on every color and being like, ooh, it pops that way. Ooh, it pops differently that way. Like, it's so many options.
Yeah, and then you change, like, the fabrics and the material as well, lots of size options. So really, really customizable, which I like. And also, since it's unique design submitted by independent artists, it's also going to be very unique to your interests and what you like. Like, one that I am liking this week, we were hanging out with a friend the other day who was wearing this, and it always gets in my head every time I see it. It's called Tossed Salad and Scrambled Chili Dogs. It is a shirt that says Frasier from the TV show Frasier, but it is in the font of the old school Sega logo. So it is Frasier or Frasier, depending on how you want to pronounce it. It always gets in my head every time. Frasier in the...
It works better slow, I think,
Or Frasier from the advertisements or when you started up a game. It depends on what you... But it always gets in my head every time I see it. Toss Salad and Scrambled Chili Dogs is the name of the shirt. That's what I'm liking this week.
That's a really fun one. Mine is a G.I. Joe washout shirt. So it says G.I. Joe in the classic fonts with the classic red, white, blue colors. And just on the bottom under G.I. Joe, it says washout because not everyone makes it, you know?
Mm.
We all want to be a G.I. Joe, but some of us know.
Some of you can't quite do it.
I know I couldn't quite do it.
It's not for everyone.
I mean, apparently now I could make it, though. Not just for Americans anymore.
It's for a Canadian could be a G.I. Joe. It's 2021. A Canadian could be a G.I. Joe.
Excellent. I don't want to be.
I'll still
pass. I've seen this film.
Still pass.
Still going to hard pass, but the shirt's nice.
The shirt's nice. So those are designs that we're liking this week. You can find either of those designs at our storefront, which is over at tpublic.fromsuperheroes.com. And when you shop through our storefront, if you grab something that that we have in there, ones that we've mentioned on the podcast, ones that we like ourselves, or even if you just shop around and get anything from the site, as long as you do it through that link, through our storefront, you will not only support the artist who designed the shirt, you will also directly support this podcast as well. So head on over to tpublic.fromsuperheroes.com. That is teepublic.fromsuperheroes.com. And thank you so much, TeePublic, for your support.
Thank you so much, TeePublic.
And now back into G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, an absurd movie with too many plot lines that you need a detective board to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, you need the Charlie board, the Pepe Silva. I would like to be positive for a moment.
Please do. Please do.
I will be positive. I think the Snake Eyes Storm Shadow storyline is pretty good, and I think they're both great.
I think it is upsetting how unnecessary that it is, and it's also the best thing in the movie.
It's absolutely cuttable. I understand why they were like, let's do a whole movie of this.
Yes.
Because this is great stuff. This should be this movie. This should be a separate movie.
And also, the kids, like, who play the young version of them, it might be the best fight sequence in the movie.
That kid fight is the best fight sequence in the movie. It's like a classic, like, Jackie Chan, like, lot of long takes. Like, and also there's, like, a little bit of comedy. He takes a bite of a roll before he starts fighting because he's starving, because he's a starving street kid. Like, that scene felt like it was in a different movie entirely.
It felt so Jackie Chan. I'm glad that you brought that up. Turning on the stove, using props, is such a Jackie Chan thing. Like, turning on the stove and running across a hot stove. Trying to eat while doing it, that is a, like, drunken master, I'm trying to drink while you're fighting me. That is, like, a Jackie Chan's done that with alcohol instead of food. Taking the bite of the roll and then spinning it at him to distract him while doing, like, a grimy fight style. The most Jackie Chan ass fight possible by, like, two kids.
And the kids are good. Like, these are not stunt doubles jumping in for these kids. This felt like when I was watching Sharkboy and Lava Girl and Taylor Lautner, like, is a crazy cool martial artist, apparently.
Right.
Like,
starts doing backflips and stuff as a child, and you're like, what the hell?
And I guess when you hire two kids who don't have any lines, you are just going to get martial arts kids. So, but still, they're very young, and their fight scene is awesome. And even their training scenes later are pretty good. Like, they're just training scenes, but they're still really good. Like, these kids looked like they were taking hits. They were fully devoted to the fight. They were all in. Yeah, this was, I think, because there was no CG, there's nothing getting in the way, and they just let them fight it out. It's the best scene in the movie.
All of the best scenes in the movie come from this. And it's so wild that it's so utterly removable from the movie, and it's the best part of the movie at the same time. It's such a conundrum for me.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, like the what would be changed maybe would be like take it out and make it its own movie. So I'm like, come on, July 23rd when Snake Eyes comes out. It's just the extended version of whatever this is.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a story that's been told before, that like adoptive brother, like it's a very video game-esque, it's Ryu and Ken. Like it is, it's a story that's been done, but it's one that I really like and I'm kind of a sucker for, and it really works in this. And it does say a lot about this movie that, you know, we mentioned earlier how, you know, this diminishes good actors to mediocre and it relinquishes bad actors to atrocious or whatever, because everyone seems like they're unhappy to be here on this movie. And for characters like Snake Eyes and is it Storm Shadow?
It is Storm Shadow.
Snake Eyes, for characters like Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow, it makes sense because one of them doesn't talk and the other one is just kind of shitty and unhappy to be there. So it works for those characters. And then these kids show up and give the most impassioned performance of the movie. So it's the only like four characters that are in canon and actually like work for what the writing is and the tone is, and everything aligns perfectly for these four.
They do. And I will say, we said everyone's bad in this, but I think Storm Shadow, Lee Byung-hung, I think he's actually doing a great performance.
Yes.
He's the only one who's like popping and is kind of like oozing evilness in a fun way. Mm-hmm. Like the way he'll just like kill anyone that goes after Anna, and he's just like so cool about it. Like he gives the best performance in this movie. If everyone matched his tone, this movie might be fun.
I think you're right. I think it might be him. I'm trying to think of anyone who might outdo it. I want to say Marlon trying his best, but Marlon gets nothing and needs something, mm-hmm. whereas Storm Shadow is just like works in a vacuum. Like
he is working,
gets it done
completely
alone.
In a vacuum, because even his other scenes are with Snake Eyes, who isn't speaking.
Mm.
So he's doing it all on his own. He's doing a great job. The only other person who's not enough scenes, I would say, is Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
Just when he's just like catcalling during the Snake Eyes fight. Like, I'm like, Brendan Fraser, you need more to do. You're so great in this. He's just instantly fun and only there for half a second.
He's the exact tone that this movie should have. This fun, charming, playfully self-aware character. Yeah. But so, I'm with you that
Storm Shadow
is the highlight performance of the movie.
Their names are so long.
There's a lot going on. It's relatively easy to remember most of them.
But just so long to be like a code name in the field.
Okay. Like Storm. Storm would have been enough.
Storm Shadow, get down. It's like so many syllables if you're trying to call out to somebody.
Storm or Shadow is what it should have been.
You gotta pick one.
I do want to talk about the costume design of Snake Eyes.
Holy crap, it's so scary.
It is so unsettling. In a great way. I love what they did with this costume. And it took me the whole movie to be like, why is this so upsetting? Why is it so upsetting? Because it's kind of like that thick leather of like 80s Keaton Batman.
Yeah.
It's not the type of superhero costume that we make nowadays. Nowadays it is more like athletic wear, movable, functional fabrics. This is kind of a dated 80s, maybe early 90s thick leather costume. But that alone is not what makes it weird. What makes it so upsetting is that it is seamless and that it has lips.
The lips? It's the lips. There's absolutely the lips.
There's never lips. If a
mask
hero
doesn't have lips.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, if you have a full mask, there's no lip. If Spider-Man had lips,
it would be upsetting.
It would be upsetting.
Well, it would be a little less upsetting because you would see, like, the fabric stretch and move as he talks. But I think what's part of what's brilliant about this is that the costume design department might understand the assignment better than the director or anyone who works on this movie, where it really parallels and metaphors the vow of silence, is these like thick, tense rubber lips to represent that I have the ability to speak, but yet will not. That there is something that actually represents that character and who that character is as a person, and is also deeply unsettling. It is brilliant costume design.
Yeah, because every other mask that covers your mouth is just flat. It would be so easy to be like, it's flat because he has no mouth because he doesn't speak. But to have these ingrained, such clear lips, it is so freaky. And it also feels like a man has been turned into rubber.
Yeah.
It feels like you're a rubber man. And also, I don't know how he sees anything because the blacked out eyes are so blacked out.
Yeah.
Like, it's all crazy well done.
Yeah, it's
I don't know how we fought in that thing. Apparently it was very hard. mm-hmm. which might be why the fight scenes are like a little bit more chopped up than usual for a Ray Park fight. I think maybe there was a lot of breaks in there.
Yeah. So a few things going on in there, but just great design though.
Great design.
Slightly less functional, less practical probably, but unsettling, interesting, character-driven, incredible design.
And also, just from a writing perspective, I think Snake Eyes was the most fun. I always like the guy who just goes off on his own with full competency. Right. It reminds me of, like, Black Panther in the Avengers.
I was just about to say Black Panther in Avengers Animated. Yeah.
Yeah, like, he would always just, like, he doesn't speak, he just runs off, and he's like, I'm going to destroy one of these missiles in half a second and save an entire city.
Yeah.
And he just does it. And I think that is such a fun, interesting character. So yeah, it's actually made me, the only thing this movie has successfully done is made me hyped for a potential Snake Eyes movie.
Yeah, because it's all of the aspects that worked about this story.
Yeah, everything good was Snake Eyes Storm Shadow.
But I also think, and I watched some of the cartoons when I was younger, but I'm not like, I don't remember the lore, I don't remember the mythos, I haven't read the comics, I'm not a G.I. Joe guy. But I do get the impression, to a certain degree, that Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes are really the only things that they kind of used from G.I. Joe in this. Mm. So, like, it's not surprising that, like, I'm excited for Snake Eyes because that's the only thing of the property that this movie kept. So maybe I would be excited for a G.I. Joe movie that actually knew what G.I. Joe was and didn't just make it Rainbow Six with Transformer suits as well, because those mech suits...
That's a different movie. That's a movie about mech suits.
It does not belong here at all. No. And it is mediocre design. Like, it doesn't really work as a costume either.
Well, they put so much in the movie that they didn't put any, like, love and attention into one single thing, except maybe Snake Eyes' suit. Like, it's like, we need mech suits, and we need invisibility suits, and we need brainwashing, and we need... nanobites, and we need planes. Like, there's so much to CG that they couldn't be like an Iron Man armor. They're not we spent days and weeks designing one cool armor. They're like, we made some real basic bitch armor.
Yeah.
This is
very
this
plain,
is exactly just, what you would picture.
Just
if you
matte
were, like,
silver, like no matte coloring, suit. No anything, nothing interesting whatsoever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but also I will say, for a movie from 2009, the CG looks pretty good.
It's not bad.
Considering how much CG is in this, and that it wasn't a super, super high budget movie, it looks pretty good.
It looks pretty good. I wish it had less, because when the movie does shine, one thing that I will give this movie a lot of credit for is practical stunts and explosions. Mm. Like, they blow up a lot. This actually feels like an older action movie at times, which is kind of where this shines, and it feels like that area of camp where G.I. Joe could excel as an 80s-style action movie. But there are times where I'm like, that opening scene where they're ambushed, the convoy is ambushed. I'm like, you're actually like flipping Humvees and you have gas lines running under the set to cause these incredible explosions, and you're hitting ramps and there's practical explosions, and you can see the heat of a propane fire hitting the actor's face because that was a real thing that went off over there, and it all works. And I do agree with you, the CGI is unobtrusive and surprisingly good for the year it came out and the budget that this was done on. But it really does shine when this movie uses practical stuff, and it also feels like the universe that this movie should exist in.
Yeah, because as we said, the kid fight, completely practical, is the best part of the movie. And you're right, that opening scene is very practical, and you can feel it. Like, and also, they wreck the shit out of those cars. Like, it's not just like, we kind of blew up a car a little. It's like, it flies into a tree. Mm. Like, that car felt like it went through, like, a catapult.
Yeah.
They really wrecked those guys. So, like, you really felt some stakes in that fight. You're like, oh, man, they are not winning this.
Yeah.
They are getting demolished. And you felt it in your bones. And you don't really feel it again the rest of the movie.
I never really feel any fight after that at all. Yeah.
No, because then people turn invisible and you let the chain go around their neck. And
they can't really decide whether they want this to be, like, practical and grounded or silly and over the top, because that fight was very gritty and it felt like a military ambush. Like, I did sincerely feel like there were two guys in the military who were losing the other people that they serviced with. while Channing Tatum disobeys a direct order, which is to guard the briefcase to save his buddy. Like, he literally abandons duty in that moment to save his best friend in a hopeless situation where everyone else has died and he's given up. And people are dying, and it is brutal and it is terrible. And there are some brutal murders off the top as well. Channing Tatum stabs a guy through the eye. There were multiple deaths like that. A
lot of eye shots. I think they didn't have a line about it, but it felt like the armor was only weak at the eye that the bad guys had. So just a lot of eye stabs.
And then they go from that to be like, we have guys in like head to toe metal. They are indestructible. You can only hit them in the eye and it's a brutal death. And you and your friends are vulnerable to like, there is now a woman in a cat suit. And you can have a woman in a cat suit, but if you have that, then you also need to have, like, the silly guys on the Joe side. You can't have the Joe side be like, all right, everyone's a brick shit house with a Gatling gun. And then the Cobra side be like, we've got one cat suit and a man with a sword. And that is it. And that is, like, that is all that they have. And then some nameless henchmen who are regular military men or whatever.
Well, and the fact that her shitty cat suit didn't do anything...
Yeah.
So it's like, here's eight henchmen. They're all dressed the exact same in these Cobra outfits. They got guns. They're decked out. And then this girl walks in her, like, cat suit and glasses, because those are sexy. I mean, to some people. It's just not traditionally.
She has transition lenses, which is a huge deal that she makes out of it.
And it's just like, and she walks out, and maybe the idea is like, she's so dangerous, she doesn't need armor or something. But like, just having a woman walk out in a cat suit, you're just like, ugh.
And that's also not how human bodies work. Like, because they're firing, like, the military guys are firing missiles. Like, full-on, like, RPG rocket-propelled grenades at these dudes who are, like, getting hit, but they're wearing full head-to-toe, heavy, impenetrable armor. And this woman's walking out in a cat suit.
She doesn't even have her hair in a ponytail.
Like, her hair's not pulled
down,
back.
It's loose.
Explosions still hurt you. Like, you're good in a fist fight, but there's no level of... It's just dumb.
It's just so dumb. I hate it so much. Oh, my God. Everything with Anna is... Let's just go into Anna. Everything with this character is absolutely... a train wreck, from the acting to the writing to the responses to the character.
I said something while watching this movie that I have said maybe 20 times in my life, and I probably will say again, which is, we were watching the movie, I opened up IMDb to look at the cast, and I went, oh, this is Sienna Miller?
And then I went, this is Sienna Miller?
Which is what we have said every time we have seen Sienna Miller in anything. Sienna Miller is the silence. She's a Doctor Who villain where the second you stop looking at her, she stops existing. Like, she's the most generic person that has ever actor that has ever existed.
She is, and like, she's gorgeous in the most forgettable way. Like, she is a gorgeous woman. But her face just disappears. Maybe it is absolutely perfectly symmetrical, and that means it won't stay in your brain.
Right.
Because I have seen her in several movies, and I thought I knew what she looked like. And yes, this exact same thing happened to me. I did not know this was Sienna Miller.
Yeah, she is a styrofoam cup of water. Like, it is the minimal amount to fulfill your needs as, like, a human actor, and it is the most, like, forgettable thing that you could ever experience.
It's so weird, like a glass that's so clear you can only see through it, and you're like, that's beautiful glass, but I just see right through it and it goes away. I don't even know how to explain the impossibleness for this woman to stay in my mind. But yeah, she's very bad. And then everything about Anna is... So okay. So Anna was dating Duke, and then Rex, her brother, was killed. Mm-hmm. And then Duke genuinely does seem like he was a jerk and just never talked to her about it and left her alone. And she didn't say, leave me alone. He just kind of was like, she's going to be mad. I'll just go away.
Oops. Bye.
Oops. Bye.
Which is rude, but.
And then Rex has, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, has the greatest plan of all. He's like, why did you brainwash your sister? He's like, she was so sad about my death that I had to brainwash her to make her not sad. And I'm like, but you weren't dead.
Why
did you just tell her you weren't dead?
None of it makes
And then she would have been like, I'm so happy you're not dead.
The thing that that killed me the most about that moment is, so in that, it's voiceover. He says, after you came home and I was dead, she was so sad, so distraught, I had to help her. But the camera, what we see in that moment, the scene, is her just peacefully sleeping.
Just asleep.
Like, it's not her, like, in a room that's a mess, crying as she's, like, shotgunning alcohol and as she's just, like, just obliterated and a shattered person. It's her in a tidy room sleeping in, like, just, like, some cute underwear and a nightshirt. Like, she still looks like beautiful, gorgeous Sienna Miller. Like, she still straightened her hair before bed. Her eyes, life is perfectly together.
Her eyes aren't red. There's not even, like, tissues on the side table like she was crying. Like, she's doing pretty fine, it seems. And he's like, she was a broken woman.
I needed to inject her full of snake stuff.
I had to do it.
You forced my hand again, Duke.
This is your fault, Duke. It's your fault I'm alive and she was sad about me being dead.
I don't know what kind of a villain origin this is. It's such a mishmash of like 9 different origin stories. When we talk about how this movie has too much going on, it has too much going on from Jump Street with, first of all, nonlinear storytelling. Like, it starts off out of the gate and I was sincerely confused if we were watching the first movie. Because there's two of these.
There's two of these.
And they both have subtitles. So this is G.I. This isn't just called G.I. Joe. It's G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. And we were watching it, and part of me was actually worried. I'm like, oh no, I didn't put on the first one. This is the second one. Because it starts late with a backstory, and Anna shows up, and he's like, oh my God, Anna? And I'm like, who the fuck is Anna? There's too much going on from the jump. It's nonlinear storytelling. It's a weird villain origin story that's kind of similar to GoldenEye, but
I was thinking GoldenEye because he didn't have as much time as he was told he had.
But no one was to blame. It is oops, who's GoldenEye.
Who's that pilot who got there too soon on the airstrike?
Who fucked up? Because Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, the doctor,
Cobra Commander.
He's got like Cobra Commander, and he's got 2 other names. But his main reason that he's mad at Duke was that Duke was like, I'm going to stay here shooting, you go in, which was the job. And then he did that.
That he signed up for and was fully aware of.
And everything went a little bit off, but not in any way that was anyone's fault. And also he survived.
And also he survived, and we didn't get any clues that he was evil before or what made him evil after. Like when the bombs hit, did he get hit with some nanobots that made him evil? Like, did Dr. Mindbender bend his mind, as his name indicates?
Yeah.
The guy he met in the bunker, like...
It seemed like once he saw those videos in the bunker, even before he got bombed and injured or whatever happened to his face, that he was like, oh no, I'm super into this. Like, he seemed super into it right away, make it the villain origin story then.
It doesn't, but like, you know, he was into science. Like, does that make him evil or like, science is cool?
I don't know.
It was so loosey-goosey.
But it was a smidge away from GoldenEye. They wanted to do a GoldenEye thing, but they didn't know how to write that technique.
He was like, Duke, it's your fault that she was like this because you abandoned her, and he's really mad at Duke. And I'm like, you haven't done anything to Duke. You didn't even come after Duke.
Mm.
Like, he's here incidentally.
Right.
He's here because he was the guy carrying the briefcase. You didn't involve Duke at all.
No.
Even though you seem to hate him.
Yeah. Yeah, he had nothing to do with it.
He had nothing to do with it.
Interesting.
Happened to have the briefcase with the missiles.
And the other, it's almost like kind of origin story they do, because Duke is meant to be like the new guy. Mm-hmm. Duke and Ripcord, I guess, are meant to be the new guys at G.I. Joe. So we learn about Joe through, and that's a very typical movie thing. They almost did like a Kingsman thing where like he's the guy with a shit ton of potential, but is a mess of a recruit that someone has to like vouch for and then slowly proves himself. Because they even have this thing where Dennis Quaid is like, you tested for Joe 8 months ago. And like, Duke is like, I don't remember that. And he's like, you failed the test though. And I'm like, but it seems like when we get flashbacks that he's always been very good at his job.
I think he failed because he was sad about Anna. I think he was mentally not
Okay.
Like, I think he was
we
always...
We need to see that.
Oh, I'm not saying they did a good job. Yeah. But when he said, like, this amount of time ago, I'm like, oh, is that when Anna broke up with you and Rex died? Like,
right.
You wouldn't be good recruitment material at that time.
Okay. Interesting.
That was my take. I think he was always good at his job.
Okay.
But it's also like he didn't have anywhere to grow. Once he got there, they're like, oh shit, you guys are both in the 99th percentile of Joes.
You're both real good. Sure, yeah, you're in.
It's so easy. There's no like proving yourself. It's no like get out of here and then you have to go back in later.
Yeah. Yeah. There was no getting better montage. It didn't have that I'm the gritty underdog. That you're rooting for type of vibe.
They were just instantly very powerful. They got there and they got mech suits and like, cool, we have mech suits now.
And it's like, oh, we're pretty good at using them. I can fly a submarine. That's a thing that I'm good at. Mm-hmm. My name's Duke. I can drive a submarine.
Ripcord's like, I used to fly a crop duster and I'm going to shoot down some missiles, no problem.
Yeah, like at least they tried to seed in with him that he'd wanted to move to the Air Force from the Army and shit like that. But... yeah, just a mess. So many elements and none of it works.
So many elements. I'm so sorry to go back, but please. I wasn't done with Anna because Anna's storyline, still a mess. Her brother, all the weird stuff or whatever. And also just genuinely upsetting because what we don't, the movie doesn't really go deep into this, but it definitely has happened that she has been sexually just trafficked via this brainwashing.
Yes, both with the Baron and with
Christopher Eccleston.
Deathstro.
I think that is Destro.
Destro, yes.
Yeah, with Destro. Because Destro she makes out with and is implied to have a sexual relationship with. She definitely has sex with the Baron all the time. They are married. She talks about it. And she has been brainwashed this entire time. This is the least cool storyline, guys. Yeah. This is not cool. And such a weird storyline to be like, your brother did this to you.
And is pretty happy with how it has turned out for you.
He's like, this is good for her.
Yeah, he's like, she was distraught before.
Yeah.
She was distraught because she thought I was dead. I wasn't.
But now this is better. She has multiple boyfriends. No.
What?
Ew, no. Like, you would think if you're going to do a my brother has brainwashed me story, she would have no boyfriends. He'd be like, no one's good enough for my sister. She's now the leader of the Cobras.
Well, I even thought they were going to do with Storm Shadow. When Storm Shadow was doing the, like, I have orders to, like, kill anyone who touches, if he touches you again. I'm like, Then you haven't consummated your relationship with the Baron. And, like, your brother has sent Storm Shadow to make sure that these horrible things don't happen to a brainwashed sister. But it was just Storm Shadow being petty?
Just being petty while he was around. Because she even has a line after that that's like, the Baron, because he's a physicist, works better after we're intimate. So I'm like, okay, so you've had sex with him.
Right.
She had like a line that definitely said she has had sex with this man.
Yeah.
Upsetting.
Pretty gross stuff.
Gross.
Don't understand why any of it's in the movie.
Not fun.
Definitely not the fun camp that you would want a G.I. Joe movie to be. Again, to go back to the line from the Community episode, the bad guys wear Cobras, the good guys are Army men. It's really not that complicated.
It's not. And then they try to make it fun sometimes. Very rarely. They'll be like, let's do a fun thing. And they fail so hard. And I'm speaking specifically about the airplane that speaks Celtic.
I don't... Was that supposed to be fun?
I think that was supposed to be a joke. I think that was supposed to be a fun bit. You have to speak Celtic to run this airplane. Which if you took it a little further and you had to do full sentences or something, or the plane was speaking Celtic to you, maybe it would be. But just to be like, you have to say one word in Celtic. I think that was a joke.
Was it? I'm baffled. I can't even process how that would be a joke.
I think it was supposed
like,
to
I'm
be.
Not, I'm not trashing on you for considering it a joke, but like I'm trying to consider at what point in writing or filming does someone be like, this is going to be funny?
What if Marlon Wayans had to speak Celtic? Funny.
What is joke?
What's the funniest language?
What is joke? I can't wrap my head around the concept of that being a joke.
That's fair, because it's not.
Yeah.
But I think this movie thought it was.
Because it's definitely not, like, it sticks out like a sore thumb. So I agree with
the rest of the movie.
I agree with your perception of, like, they thought that was funny. Because they definitely thought it was something, which is why everything grinds to a halt for it. But I still can't imagine what room thinks that it's a joke. But yeah, maybe they thought it was a joke. Everything does come to a dead stop.
They're like, watch this funny thing happen.
Yeah, and he just says the word fire in Celtic, and then it fires.
And then it fires.
And that was the whole scene.
And then he got the missile.
There are so many deletable scenes in this movie.
Oh, everything. You could just not watch it.
And I know, yeah.
If I may recommend.
That might be a big one. That might be a big one. I don't understand how they got this so far off the mark. And after Transformers as well, which we've never done Transformers on this podcast.
We've never done a Transformer. We've done Bumblebee.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But for the main line, like when Hasbro made them Transformers movies, you know, a mixed bag. Definitely some problematic elements and some huge complaints about those franchises. But ones that like were self-aware, understood what they were, and this just doesn't seem to understand what it is.
No, it was just kind of like throw it all at the wall.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's going to be fun but no fun, and it's going to be action that, oddly enough, the action looks really good but also sucks.
Yeah, like, it does also suck.
It sucks. It's never like, whoa, even though I'm like, a lot of these elements are cool. But they're not working. Like, the gun that just, like, blows up everything. It's like an air cannon or something that Anna has.
Mm.
It's a cool gun. And in a video game or something, I'd be like, great weapon. But it's just, it has no impact, I think, because so many things are happening at all times.
Yeah.
Nothing hits you with any impact.
Yeah.
Because you're constantly just being hit with a wave of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I don't know what particular thing just hit me just now.
It's just everything stuff is going on.
Yeah.
Some people have like energy cannons randomly. We're
some
doing
people have a,
fi- a
crossbow. Some people have a sword.
Yeah, we're doing shit in a sub. Some people are just regular army guys. Everything's kind of bananas, which is a bit G.I. Joe, but also not in this. It's not as campy. It's not a guy who's like, I'm snowshoes or whatever the guy who like only has snowshoes is. But like,
is there a guy named Snowshoes?
There's a guy who only skis. I forget his name.
Oh, man.
But he just does skiing missions and shit like that. It's like everyone has a super specialty gimmick, we would say. So like everyone has a gimmick and they're not as campy as that. And I know that like Transformers, the movie series, doesn't really capture any of the kind of campy fun of Transformers, the TV show. But I would say what Transformers the show was to Transformers the movie, if you were to apply that same theory of G.I. Joe the show to G.I. Joe the movie, then this movie should be like a Zero Dark 30 dark action kind of like we are doing military action. Like
we are military.
And it might
military.
Be too severe and it might be too many explosions and too much gun, U.S. military gun, but you should at least be able to do that right. Mm. And I think it should have been that.
Mm, yeah, I can get behind that.
Yeah, but it should have been a lot of things.
It should have been so many things.
And let's get into exactly what it should have been. So let's go in now for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? So now that we've discussed everything we discussed, what would you change about this movie if you could change anything? But before we do ask the final question, we want to give a shout out to our third sponsor of today's episode. They are wonderful. They are our friends over at Enso Rings.
Enso Rings. We're wearing our Enso Rings right now. We look so fine in them.
I think we look pretty cool. It is my new favorite Star Wars collector's item. I'm wearing it right now. I'm wearing the R2-D2 ring from the Enso Ring Star Wars collection right now. It is blue. It is sharp. It pops. I like it a lot.
I have the Mandalorian ring on. It's black, but it's very fun. I really liked opening the entire box of all six and seeing how the colors all like kind of complemented each other, and you can wear like one or two together. Like R2-D2 and C-3PO together are a poppin' combination.
Ooh, I haven't really thought to combine them for myself yet.
They're a duo in many ways.
Interesting. Yeah, it's really fun. What it is, if you're not familiar with Enso rings, they're high quality, 100% silicone rings that come in many different styles from classic looks to their new Star Wars collection and everything in between. For classic looks, I think they make a really good like wedding ring substitute because you can't always wear your wedding ring. I think I was first introduced to Enso rings like a couple of years ago. We were at like a water park. We were at the water park with a couple of friends, and they switched to their Enso rings because it's like, yeah, you can't wear a metal ring down a slide. Like you want something safe and comfortable in that environment, but you don't want to
lose your wedding ring in the water park either.
And you still want to wear that symbol though. So it was good for that. But also they've got this like cool Star Wars collection for geeks with a Mandalorian ring, Darth Vader, Grogu, R2-D2, C-3PO, and a Stormtrooper design. You can get them all in a limited edition collector's box. What I like about it is that when you have the collector's box, they're all different colors. Like the R2-D2 one is like blue. The C-3PO one is gold. I'm wearing the R2 one because I like switching up the rings to match the color of the band on my fitness watch. So I've got like a fitness watch and I've got like a few different color bands for that. So occasionally I switch those out and then I switch out the ring and I got this fun little like coordination and color coordination, and it looks sharp. It looks spiffy. I like how it comes together.
They're very, very spiffy. If you don't want all six, you can buy your favorite individually though as well. And they're durable, flexible, comfortable. They're safer than traditional metal rings, and you're going to look great and feel and be like, I got Star Wars on my finger.
You got cool Star Wars on your finger, and they're, yeah, just super comfortable, super cool. You can even keep it on at the gym. I've worn it while I work out and while I sleep, literally forgetting that I'm wearing it because it's that comfortable and easy. So order Enso Rings' new Star Wars collection today for yourself or the Star Wars fan in your life. Go to EnsoRings.com now. That is E-N-S-O rings.com, and you get free shipping with the promo code Star Wars. So that's EnsoRings.com, ENSORings.com. And thank you, Enso Rings, for your support.
Thank you so much, Enso Rings.
And as well, before we go in for the close and the final question,
We gotta ask it.
We hate to ask it, as we do every week. If you've already done it, skip ahead. If you haven't, please chill for a second. Please subscribe, follow, rate, and review on whatever podcatcher that you use in whatever language or terminology that they might use. Some call it follow, some call it subscribe. You hit the button. Rate and review us because it helps us move up the charts. It helps us get recommended to new listeners. And when new listeners find us, they do check those reviews, and that makes it more likely that new listeners will actually hit download. So it makes a big difference. And while you're there, don't just do it for us. Do it for a couple of the other podcasts that you listen to in your life because it only takes a couple of minutes. And while you're there, just crank out a few. I'm sure every podcast that you listen to appreciate it, even if they don't remember to tell you every week to do it.
Yeah, everyone you leave a review for will be like, oh, my day has been made. I guarantee it.
It makes a huge
help.
They can
email to us. Yeah. We read them.
It's a small thing, but it makes a big difference for podcasts, and it does warm the hearts. So do that as well. It's a free way to support the podcast. You can also support the podcast by tweeting about it or sharing this podcast on whatever social media you use. That's a free way to support us because we don't have an advertising budget, so that's word of mouth is the best way that we get out there. And as well, if you want to support the podcast monetarily, you can do it by subscribing on our Patreon page. Patreon is a subscription service where you get cool bonuses for kicking in whatever is in your budget. You can do Patreon monthly. You can do it yearly. You can do a buck a month, five, 10, 15, whatever you want. You can also cancel or change your membership level once your month or year is up. And there's no obligations, there's no contract, no anything like that. You can just change it up whenever you want to. And you're always going to get a cool bonus, no matter what your level. Like at the $1 level, you get our webcomic Texts from Superheroes a Day Early. At the $10 a month hero level, you do get a bonus episode of this podcast every single month. And this month's bonus episode of the podcast, we were talking about the next G.I. Joe movie. We're talking about G.I. Joe Retaliation, is it?
Andrew is checking the title because who knows? It's the one with The Rock.
It's Retaliation. It's the one with The Rock.
Just Retaliation. Just Retaliation. One word.
Yeah.
So much easier than The Rise of Cobra.
Way easier. G.I. Joe Retaliation is what we're going to be talking about. And if I remember correctly, it's better than the first one.
I also remember it being better. Well, it's in 2013. So it's late Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not late Rock, but like, but Rock knows who he is.
It is a coming of age Rock, I will say. So that's going to be an interesting
Rock.
One. That's a transformative Rock. So that's going to be over on our Patreon page very soon. Our special episode about G.I. Joe Retaliation. That's only for our hero level patrons. And when you sign up at that level, you also get access to the back catalog of all the Patreon exclusive episodes we've ever done. So lots of extra listening over at patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. That's patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. And now, let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? Diana, what would you change?
This movie needs to, will not happen. Like, a new movie would be better. But if we're just changing this movie, the best I can do is the Baroness is just an evil lady. This is not Duke's ex-girlfriend. No gross brainwashing. Ew, ew, ew. She's just an evil lady. She's evil. Evil McEvil. And then I think the biggest change that would make the biggest difference for me is Duke and Ripcord basically never get separated.
Ooh, okay.
Because this is like where the charm's going to be. This is like you have to have one main relationship. Because even in this movie, like Marlon Wayans like flies in to stop the missiles. And then he's like, make sure you guys save Duke. His best friend. None of the Joes go to save Duke. Duke just saves himself off, like, on his own. And I really, there's no bonds that are holding this movie together. So to me, Duke and Ripcord kind of just never get separated. There's no plane. There's no ex-girlfriend. They're just doing everything together. They're doing training montages together. They're doing fights together. They're infiltrating together, or they're getting captured together. Whatever you got to do. I need a base relationship in this movie.
Interesting.
So that's my biggest change. Evil McEvil lady is just evil.
Yeah.
These two are the mains and their relationship matters.
Evil McEvil. I mean, that's not less subtle than Baroness, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just evil. This relationship is the main relationship and it matters. So it's got to matter. So that's my quick, easy change. Mm. But Andrew, what about you? What would you change?
I think my big change would be that Duke and Ripcord aren't. First of all, I agree with that, but I would say that Duke and Ripcord aren't the new guys.
Oh.
There is no purpose to having a difference between the military and the Joe organization, and I do think that this movie can get away with being one of the few movies that's a little bit more rah-rah American military, which is not normally something I love, but it's something this could get away with. But whatever, you can do the international version as well. Plot-wise, though, there's no reason to start this movie with the subterfuge of, like, Duke and Ripcord's military unit were attacked and trapped, and then he has to apply to another unit, and then the flashbacks are part of a different unit. It's just Joe.
It's like, just Joe.
From minute one of this movie, Duke and Ripcord are part of G.I. Joe. Their unit gets ambushed. That was the word I was searching for a minute ago, ambushed. Duke and Ripcord, they are part of Joe. They are transporting a weapon. Their unit gets ambushed. And then right away it becomes like, how could an infiltrator or someone get into Joe?
Mm.
And I think that would be a great thing for, like, should we trust Christopher Eccleston? He gave us this warhead to transport. Is he the baddie? And it makes everything so much clean and simpler, as opposed to being like, well, Christopher Eccleston worked for NATO, who subcontracted the U.S., who then was ambushed by Christopher Eccleston's other subcontractors to cause Duke to apply to a new job. Okay, why wasn't Duke just part of Joe? He's moving a thing. Moving the MacGuffin didn't go well. Oops. Here we go. So we don't need the military. And then also, if we have Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, the doctor, Deathstro. Is it Deathstro?
No, he's Cobra Commander.
Cobra Commander, the doctor, in these flashbacks as like the brother or the romantic interest. If that was still a Joe mission, it would actually really add a lot to the plot to be like, Joe's been infiltrated. Like, we've been getting set up by McCullough to fail. Like, this guy is selling weapons to both sides. Joe is an international unit, but we still get shit. We don't make our own weapons from scratch.
We still have to get them somewhere.
We get them from this dude, and this dude's selling to both sides and has been setting us up for failure from the jump. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character was evil and was a part of us. And we thought he was dead when really we just led him to the intel that he wanted. So that, I think, could be interesting. Be like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt was part of Joe with Duke, and they led him to the thing that he wanted. And Duke had this guilt the whole time to be like, I let my buddy die, and I had to abandon my fiance, when in reality his buddy was Cobra Commander, a shitty guy who had infiltrated Joe, and Joe led him to the very valuable thing that he wanted the whole time.
I think that works great. So much more personal, as I said, relationships are so important in these movies. So it's such a more personal relationship for, like, Cobra versus G.I. Joe. Mm. The leader of Cobra was in the G.I. Joe, was infiltrated. Yeah, and G.I. Joe isn't so complicated a notion that you need an introductory character to, like, be walking through. It's like, we're a bunch of really good soldiers.
Yeah.
You don't need to have a first day, like, walkthrough of what that is.
We see some guys with snakes on their helmets, and we shoot at them.
That
is the entire premise of G.I. Joe.
It's not that complicated.
It's not that complicated.
You don't need an introductory day. Yeah. No, I think that's really great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's no reason to waste, like, 10 to 15 minutes on joining Joe.
Yeah, and then...
I do love a montage.
Yeah, but we didn't even get that properly. You would need, I think with a introductory character montage, it would have to be like, this movie's all, that totally rechanges everything. But if I'm just doing like a soft thing, I think it's just the U.S. military is gone. Duke was never part of it. There is only Joe and McCullough's thing. And we don't need a mini plot about political NATO subcontracts to U.S. military industrial complex, which leads to job abandonment and an international road. Like, there is way too much stuff about people getting recalled to your own individual nations due to a UN tribunal. Like, no one gives a fuck about the politics of this.
Do we keep the swapped-in U.S. president? How do we feel about this plot line? I forgot
that they swapped the U.S. president, and it's literally just a setup for the next movie because they don't even draw attention to in this one.
And I'm not even sure if that's what the next movie's about.
I have no idea. Find out on the Patreon episode.
Check out our Patreon to find out if that's what the next movie is about.
But I agree with you. Duke and Ripcord, for life, they're in the whole thing beginning to end, and they're always part of Joe.
Yeah, I think that would add a lot more sincerity and fun and charm into the movie, but I like that they're always Joe. That would make so much more sense. They could have so much more built-in relationship with everyone then. Yeah. I love relationships.
Yeah. You want it. Relationships. Want it. All right. Well, that's going to be it for this week. I think that covers G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. If you want to hear more G.I. Joe talk, head over, check out our Patreon page where we're going to be doing G.I. Joe Retaliation for this month's Patreon exclusive. Next week on the podcast, building up to the release of the new Fast and Furious movie, we are going to be talking about Fast 5.
Ooh, we got to run down to 5 because we've already done 6, 7, and 8.
We've done 6, 7, and 8. We're hopping now. We're doing 5, which is one of my faves. So.
Oh, yeah. 5's a banger.
It's an exciting week. So we're going to be talking about Fast 5 next week on the podcast. In the meantime, if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach me on Twitter at Ivamy, Ivimey.
You can reach me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And we'll see y'all next week.
Bye.